Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits specializing in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. You can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter. I encourage you to comment the Chicago way early and often using the hashtags NonprofitU or WeatheringTheStorm. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. The chat room is open and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account. You will find a link to open the account on this episode page. You'll also email me questions at consulting@valeriefleonard.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at the 15-minute mark. The call-in number is area code 347-884-8121. Today's episode will include nonprofit news headlines, budget updates, and strategies for nonprofits to survive during turbulent times. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions and participate in live chats at about the 15-minute mark. The call-in number is area code 347-884-8121. Nonprofit professionals are especially encouraged to call in and share your war stories and strategies. I want to take the time to share with you some recent headlines from the Nonprofit Times. I've shared summaries on my Nonprofit U blog. You can go to valeriefleonard.com/nonprofitU and check my post, Headlines from the Nonprofit Times. The summaries are linked to the full articles on the Nonprofit Times website. The first article is Ford Foundation Refocuses Its Funding Model. The article describes how the Ford Foundation is refocusing their grant making on social justice issues, and then they'll also be putting more money into support for general operating expenses. And that's a really good thing because we all know how hard it is to get funding for general operating expenses. Ford Foundation is going to be streamlining the organization and increasing transparency so that they can be more responsive to the needs of grantees. It's not in this particular article, but the Ford Foundation is so focused on transparency that they are now requiring their nonprofit grantees to enter into a Creative Commons license. This means that any materials generated from programs that they fund should be made available to others free of charge and without prior permission. This includes redistribution, copying, and tailoring the materials for specific uses. The only thing that Ford requires is that people who use the materials give credit to the authors of the materials. The Ford Foundation is going to be focusing on 6 program areas, and that includes civic engagement in government, creativity and free expression, gender, ethnic, and racial justice, inclusive economics, internet freedom, and youth opportunity and learning. The next article is Donor Splurge, Giving Hits $358.3 billion. The Giving USA Foundation sponsored a study by the Indiana University Lilly Family School of Philanthropy. They found that donations to charities have increased by over 7% between 2013 and 2014, and that foundation giving has increased in each of the past 7 years. It's bounced back to the same level, in fact, that they were before the recessions that started in 2007. The recovery has occurred much quicker than anticipated, and and what I find interesting is the fact that while the greatest percentage of giving has been for religious purposes, the level of giving to religious causes has actually declined over the past 30 years. And 30 years ago, in 1984, about 53% of all charitable giving went to religious purposes. Now we're when valuable grants. John Hicks compares writing proposals to taking SAT exams. I don't know if that's a good comparison, but he says that winning a grant is a lot like the SATs. You get points just for writing your name. About 60% of winning a grant, he says, is answering the questions on the applications and telling grant makers what they want to know or sometimes what they want to hear. And the other 40% is how you answer those questions. And for me personally, I would add that organizational capacity and relationships play just as large a role, if not a stronger role, in determining whether or not your organization is successful in getting those funds. I've also included a link to the Nonprofit Times grant funding page so that you can search for current national grant opportunities. So I want to take a few minutes to talk to you today about weathering the storms, specifically nonprofit survival tactics in the age of recovery. Before we can talk about weathering the storm, we need to lay the groundwork. We'll look at questions that we should be asking ourselves while doing this work, and I know this sounds, you know, like you're at a psychiatrist's office, but, you know, it really does require some soul searching as a group. We'll be examining the state of the Illinois economy in 2015, and we'll take into account trends in two economic indicators. We'll talk about what this means for nonprofits, and then I'll share 10 tips for weathering the storm. If we don't get through the entire list, I'll post them on the Nonprofit U website at valeriefleonard.com/nonprofitu. We need to ask ourselves questions that will help us better understanding the funding environment and to do the self-assessment to position ourselves for changes in the nonprofit marketplace. You know, we should start with the general questions and then drill down to those specifics of our organization. So not every organization is going to have the same question. They may have the same types of questions. One of the first questions we have to ask ourselves is, what's the state of the economy? And I know that seems very obvious. It reminds you of, you know, of the question, it's the economy, stupid, right? But you're not stupid, and the economy is, in fact, recovering. But if it's recovering, why are nonprofits having so much trouble? The next questions we want to ask ourselves will help us understand what's going on in the nonprofit sector. This would include looking at what's happening with our peers, as well as our funders. How are they responding to the changes? In fact, funders have increased their funding, their giving, by 7.1% this year, according to GivingUSA. However, that doesn't always automatically translate into greater funding for your organization. And when I say your, I'm using that generically. Two of the hardest questions we have to ask ourselves are our services still relevant? And is our organization equipped to respond to change? And don't be ashamed if you actually have to, you know, get out of some services and go into newer services or partner with other people. I just ask that if you have to get out of a certain business, that you make arrangements for your clients, you know, make sure that they're not left out in the lurch. And one of the most important questions we have to ask is, how do we position ourselves to take advantage of change and then emerge as a stronger organization? When we open it up for questions, I'll be really, really interested to hear what some of your strategies and experiences have been. We don't need to be economists, but we certainly need to understand trends and key economic indicators for the state of Illinois if we're going to continue to do this work and do it well. When we look at the state of Illinois and we look at the economy, we find that the state has an unemployment rate of 6.1% compared to a federal rate of 5.5%, and this was back in February. At the same time, J.P. Morgan Chase was projecting that the Illinois economy was going to expand by about 3% this year compared to 4% for the nation. You, as a nonprofit leader, should care about this because the state of Illinois is the largest contributor to the nonprofit sector in Illinois. They give about $28.9 billion in grants and contracts. According to the Donors Forum, the nonprofit sector accounted for 8% of the state's workers and 8.7% of the gross state product in 2000. So roughly they account for 9% of our economy. And if you live in a community like North Lawndale, where I live, you know, we depend even more on nonprofits. About 25% of our local economy is fueled by nonprofits. So clearly, as the donors forum has indicated, one of the greatest threats to the viability of the nonprofit sector is the inability of the state to pay nonprofits on time. You know, if you live in a community that's very heavily dependent on nonprofits, this stalemate in Springfield could really, really impact what goes on. Even though the state of Illinois is in recovery, the state government continues to struggle. When Governor Rauner took office, he allowed former Governor Quinn's temporary tax increase to expire at the end of December. At that point, the state had a backlog of $6.4 billion in unpaid bills, and a significant portion of that was owed to nonprofits. So we're looking at almost 10% of the whole state's budget tied up in unpaid bills. As a result of the expiration of the temporary income tax increase, the state didn't have enough revenue to cover its expenses through the end of the fiscal year ending June 30th, and that's tomorrow. The governor, he closed the $1.6 billion budget shortfall in FY2015 by cutting every department's budget by 2.25% and terminating contracts for quote-unquote non-essential services. But it's interesting, one man's non-essential services are very essential to communities. You know, there are a number of youth services, services for ex-offenders, prisons, you know, have all been impacted. Some of the biggest hits, proportionately, have been the social services. Some social service agencies have cut certain programs and services. They've laid off staff, and they've had to close their doors. The state's backlog of unpaid bills grew another $1 billion to $7.4 billion in April, according to Reboot Illinois. The FY 2016 budget is out of balance by over $4 billion, and the governor and legislature have not reached agreement as to how to close the deficit. And again, they have less than 24 hours to close the deficit. If they don't straighten up and fly right, we're headed toward a government shutdown, or some people will call it a budget showdown, if agreement is not reached. Illinois nonprofits are clearly facing some of their toughest challenges in recent history. Organizations large and small are facing difficulty. I want to share with you 10 tips for weathering the nonprofit storm. While there's no such thing as the one-size-fits-all solution, these general principles apply to all organizations, regardless of the size or number of the years that they've been in existence. Before I share my 10 tips, I'm going to open the lines up for you to call in with questions or share your experiences. Again, if we don't get through all 10 tips, they'll be available on the Nonprofit U website tomorrow. The URL is valeriefleonard.com/nonprofitu. Okay, there are no questions right now, and I don't see any questions in the chat room either. So we're going to go with our 10 tips. Tip number one, the first thing you want to do is assess your organization's current cash position. You want to prepare monthly cash flow projections at least a year in advance. So you want to look at how much money you have coming in, how much money you expect to spend each month. You want to then project how much cash you have on hand before you run out. So do you have 3 months cash on hand? Do you have 2 months cash on hand? Do you have a full year's cash on hand? And depending on how much cash you have on hand, that is going to impact the decisions you make. It will also impact how you prioritize your decisions. In some cases, you might have to delay hiring people. You might have to delay starting a new program. You may have to lay some people off. But whatever you do when you make your decisions, you need to make sure that you prioritize your decisions based on your mission, goals, and values. The second thing you want to do, you know, once you know how much cash you have and how long it'll last, is stop the hemorrhaging. You need to cut costs and think of low-cost methods of bringing in cash and bringing it on quickly. One of the strategies that I've used in the past is, you know, things like phone-a-thons. You know, that's a very low cost thing. You know, get a bunch of fun, you know, your board members and friends in a room and ask them to call and dial for dollars. Another effective strategy for bringing in cash really quickly that I found is generating, you know, letter campaigns and following up. But the key is to make sure that you follow up. It's not enough just to send the letters. You have to actually follow up until you get a yes or a no answer. The third tip is you want to enlist your funders as partners in your success. All too often we're tempted, you know, when we're going through problems, we don't want to tell anybody, least of all our funders. You know, we want to present this perfect face to our funders, but believe it or not, you know, your funders are people too. They understand, and truth be told, they're probably going through their own issues. So they have a vested interest in your success. They should know about your challenges very early on, and you should ask them to help with things like facilitating collaborations with other organizations with similar goals. And it's really important to make sure that whatever partnerships you have, the organization actually has similar values, because you may have similar goals, but if you have different core values, that can unravel a partnership really quick. Your funders can also be, and it's not in every case, but in some cases they may be open to emergency funding. They may provide loans or provide technical assistance. And sometimes the technical assistance they provide could be even more valuable than the cash that they might have. You know, their thinking is golden. The fourth tip you might consider is conducting a community needs assessment. You know, the environment is always changing. The environment that we're existing in now is totally different in some ways than it was 3 years ago, 10 years ago, and certainly 25 years ago. You want to assess your organization's ability to thrive in the current environment and be honest with yourself and ask yourself the tough questions. Are your board structure and systems consistent with best practices? You know, have you filed the necessary paperwork with your government agencies and funders? And, you know, it's pretty hard to go and ask for leniency when you haven't done what you need to do as far as filing. Been there, done that. It's not a good feeling. So make sure that you can come clean. And if you have not, if you find yourself in a position where you have not done those things, make sure that you can share with your funders a plan to come in current. Is your leadership team capable of taking the organization where it needs to go? You should also assess your organization's programs, human resources, and financial capacity, and, you know, make adjustments where necessary. If people need additional training, sometimes it's cheaper to invest in additional training than to actually hire more staff. Is there a need for more technology? You know, wherever your assessment takes you, it's really important not just to leave the assessment there, but to actually come up with the plan and implement the plan. Don't just come up with the plan, implement the plan. Action is key. Speaking of plans, tip number six, develop a strategic plan. So the strategic plan should take into account what you've learned from the environment, what you've learned from the organizational assessment. Strategic planning itself is a process in which the organization takes stock of its mission, vision, and core values. And then once you do that, you want to position yourself to capitalize on the changes. So these changes may be uncomfortable, but we can always benefit from whatever the changes are in the environment. The end product of your strategic planning process is a set of strategies to achieve a set of long-term goals and objectives for the organization. So during this process, an organization is most concerned with two questions. The first question, where do we want to go? And that is more or less your strategic direction. And then the second question is, how are we going to get there? And those are the actual strategies and tactics. And sometimes your strategies can actually be a program. Tip number seven, enter into collaborations. You want to partner with organizations with similar values, goals, and objectives, and this will help you in the long run to save costs, deliver broader ranges of services, and then also, over the long term, make a greater community impact. But you got to be intentional about making those changes. Make sure you put systems in place where you can, you know, collect the data to prove that you're making an impact. You want to be sure that you're clarifying the roles and responsibilities of each partner through a memorandum of understanding, better known as the MOU. And sometimes you might want to take it a step further and use a contract. And basically, the difference between an MOU and a contract, an MOU is not legally binding, but usually when people see things in writing somehow, that clarifies things, and you can always ask questions. Tip number 8, enhance your organization's level of civic engagement. So you want to develop strong relationships with elected officials, in the community, and then you want to follow changes to federal and local laws that impact your organization's ability to deliver programs and services. You want to join associations or and other organizations and broad coalitions, and you want to be able to make sure that these organizations provide input into legislation and policies that impact your sector. So not only are we looking at civic engagement, but we're also looking at advocacy and policy. You want to develop positive relationships with other nonprofits, clients, and residents that benefit from your organization's work. And tip number 9, you want to strengthen your organization's management system. You want to make sure your organization is in compliance with all regulatory and grant requirements. For example, make sure your 990s are current. Make sure your AG 990s, which is the state equivalent of the 990, is current. You want to make sure that you're registered with the Attorney General's office. Ensure that you have up-to-date policies relating to financial management, human resources, program operations, etc., and make sure that all of these documents have been approved by the board. You don't want to be in a situation where you're president of an organization or you're the CEO of an organization and you're making these decisions and you can't document that you have board approval. You're setting yourself up for, you know, a situation where you can be held personally liable and the board can say, I didn't know anything about this. So no, you don't want to be a lone wolf out there. You also want to be able to track funds by donor and provide evidence that your program is meeting its goals and desired outcomes. And when I say desired outcomes, we're looking at what's going to change as a result of this program that you're offering. And finally, tip number 10, you want to find alternative revenue streams. You want to expand the number and types of funding sources for your organization. So rather than just depending on, say, the state or the federal government, which is really somewhat hard funding to come by anyway, you want to make sure that you can diversify. You know, individuals are a pretty large source. Private foundations are another good source. So you want to make sure that you have a good mix so that you're not caught up, you know, overly reliant on one source of funds. You might also consider charging fees for some of the products and services that your organization has been providing for free. Some examples, you know, if you do publications, white papers, consultations, you might consider charging nominal fees, sliding scale fees to help you offset costs. And I believe you really wouldn't have a problem, particularly if your organization is providing a perceived value. And in fact, when you do that, it makes it a whole lot easier to actually get funding from other sources. You know, so when people see that you have skin in the game and that you're bringing value to other clients and communities, then they'll, you know, they're more than willing to meet you halfway. And you might consider starting a social enterprise. And a social enterprise is basically a for-profit business that is operated by a nonprofit business. And, you know, you don't want to take this venture lightly. You want to make sure that it's indeed feasible. And one of the ways that you find out whether or not it's feasible, and when I say feasible, you know, is it going to make a profit? You know, does it make sense? You know, does it make sense to do this without sucking the lifeblood out of your organization? So one of the best ways to find that out is to develop a business plan and see where that takes you. So we will now take questions. I don't see that there are any calls, but if you have questions, Please feel free to give a call. The guest call-in number is 347-884-8121. You can also chat. You can send me an email. So far, I don't think I have any emails. Let me check my email. I don't have any emails with questions. So, given that there aren't any questions, I can safely say, unless someone gives me a call or emails me or chats, we've come to the end of our show. And I'd like to thank you for listening and sharing your thoughts for the day. Even though your thoughts are literally thoughts, you haven't committed them to the chat room or the phone. And I thank you again for being with me. I want to make sure that you come in next week. We're going to have really good guests. We're going to have Carolina Gaite, Carolina, and Cecile Carol DeMero, and they're co-directors for Blocks Together. They'll talk about strategies for making TIFs work for the local community residents. You know, all too often we hear about TIFs and how they're not working for the people and how the big boys get all the money. Well, these young ladies have figured out a way to make TIFs actually work for the people who live in the Humboldt Park community. They're going to share strategies for more participation, and they're also going to share strategies for microloans for small organizations and small businesses. So until then, I will see you next week, and thank you again. Take care.